catches of an arcade addict podcast, an introspective look at video gaming from the classic era to the modern day. Now here is your host, Brian.
Hey folks, what's going on up there? Brian here, and this is episode number 72 of the Confessions of an Arcade Addict podcast. Alright, to catch you up to speed, since I posted episode 71 several days ago, first thing that happened is that last week I got to 18 days out of 20 in a row, and then I started getting sick. Apparently my immune system was just run down because I wasn't getting very much quality rest. Full disclosure, my son is having nightmare issues, and he's been sleeping in our bed. And he sprawls out, and he's all elbows and knees, and yeah, I wasn't getting very good rest. Let's just put it that way. You combine that with working 18 days in a row at my age, and yeah, it's no big surprise that this kind of thing happened. So, I woke up. I was not feeling well on Thursday night, but I went to work anyway. And then I woke up Friday morning, and I was not feeling good at all. And I got my son off to school, and, did a couple other things, and then laid down for my morning / afternoon nap. And I said, I'm going to wake up around 1:30, and if I'm not feeling any better when I wake up, I'm going to call in. So, yeah, I went to sleep and woke up, and I immediately woke up feeling worse. I took something for the headache that was oscillating on a pain scale of 1 to 10, was oscillating between like a 3 and like an 8, and it would just go back and forth. And the first thing I did Friday morning was test myself for COVID before I did anything else, and it was negative, thankfully. And then from there, I just said, okay, I'm going to call it here. And I called into my main gig and said, yeah, I'm feeling terrible. And not only that, my I'm sick voice was in full effect. That means my voice drops about a full octave or so, where I'm talking like this or something like that, maybe even lower than that. I can't do the impression any justice because, it wasn't good. So, yeah, I called in, and then I went back to sleep and slept all the way right up until my son was about to come home from school. Got him squared away. Then he went off to therapy, and then I immediately went right back to sleep. And I slept probably until, I think I slept probably until about 7, just before my son comes home from his ABA. And after he came home, I was just not feeling all that great. The good thing is that at least my appetite didn't go anywhere, so I was able to eat. And then I go to bed fairly early for me on a Friday, which I think was like 1 a.m. or something like that. And I wake up in the morning, get my son squared away, get him off to therapy get him off about, what is it? What time does he arrive? What, about 9-ish? 9:30-ish? Something like that? And, oh, that's right, 10 o'clock. He arrives at 10. So, got him squared away, got him off to his therapy at 10, and then I basically texted my manager, said, I'm not going to be able to come in. I feel absolutely terrible. And he's like, yeah, okay, just stay home, no problem. That's why you didn't see the quasi-obligatory Facebook post that I usually post during my shift when I've got a few minutes. And then, basically over Saturday and Sunday, I basically slept, I think I slept probably about, on Sunday I slept, I think I slept like 13 hours or something like that. And, you know, then I woke up Monday and I was actually feeling a lot more like myself. And I was like, all right, so it's time to go back to work. And here we are, what, 3 days later? So that's what's pretty much been going on. I still have plans for going out to, I'm thinking of either going to Chesterfield, to go to Sparks, or go somewhere else. I'm not sure 100%. I've still got to work out the fine details. Unfortunately, it's the bill paying, part of the month where pretty much every cent that I, bring in from my home care and my main job, that goes towards paying the bills off for the month. I had a couple of extra bills last month, so yeah, I wasn't able to put anything away towards that. I did see that, you know, the donations from Benjamin and Kevin came in, so I'm going to be using that. And once again, shout out to them for donating to the podcast for as long as they have. It's been, what, I think about 3 years now in the case of Benjamin, and I think like 2 years plus in the case of Kevin. But yeah, they each donate like $10 a month, and that goes right back towards the podcast. That's going to probably end up helping to finance my trip up to Chesterfield to go to Sparks. Let's see. And yeah, then I posted episode 71 on Monday, so we're pretty much all caught up. So, let's see. So yeah, once again, I checked emails and voicemails, and still nothing's out there. So once again, if you have any questions, thoughts, and comments about anything you've heard in the past 71 episodes, I should say 72, because that includes episode 0, get a hold of me, arcadeaddictbrian@gmail.com. Also, there is a phone number for voicemails, and that number is 734-623-0832. And also, I've got social media ongoing as always. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Blue Sky, Threads, TikTok, when I have videos to post. But all those links can be found in one place. That's on Linktree. Our address is linktr.ee/arcadeaddictbrian. So you have your... And in there, you get emails, all the social media. I'm also on Twitch, and I'm probably going to be... I might be streaming from Kick. I don't know yet. Kick just doesn't have the people, you know, aside from the heavy hitters that have, you know, moved from Twitch to Kick. What else? Was there something else there? So yeah, I mean, if you've got any, you know, questions, thoughts, comments, things like that, hey, just get a hold of me. Let me know what you're thinking, you know, as long as you're nice about it, because I don't want to deal with people who are not nice. It's not fun. So hey, get a hold of me. If you got a game that you would like me to cover, or a story, you know, involving a game that I've talked about, hey, just get a hold of me and we'll have a little discussion about it. No problem. Okay, so let's see. I've got three segments for this episode. Without any further ado, let's just get right into it. Top tens. Okay, top tens. Arcade games of 1996. Okay, life had changed a lot for me between the years 1995 and 96. I'm 27 now, and this was the year that my roommate and I had a major falling out, and we ended up going our separate ways. I would not see her again probably until, oh goodness, I want to say like 2003, 2004 maybe, somewhere in there, because my girlfriend was living with me at the time. That's the marker. Let's see, but back then, I met my second ex-fiance across the D&D table, you know, which is absolutely perfect for me, you know, and for those who know me. We're, you know, even though we're not together anymore, we're still really close friends to this day. She made me her son's godfather. I was just trying to figure things out at the time. I wasn't going to arcades very much, mostly because most of the arcades in Orlando had either shut down or were on their way to shutting down. I would still make the trek over to Rocky's Replay or an arcade that was close to University of Central Florida campus, but that was only once in a great while, and the opportunities to do so were kind of dwindling. Things would kind of stay this way until the year 2000 or so, and by this time I was starting to get tired of the constant grind and lack of opportunities in Florida, and I would start looking elsewhere, namely Michigan. I'm going to probably stop recounting the arcade games of the years here, because there's not much to write about from 1997 forward. Right around 1997, I discovered the joys of emulation. I mean, it was still in its infancy in 1997, but I was someone got, you know, put me on to that. And that way, I could still have an arcade experience without leaving home. And any time that I went to an arcade during those years, I was much more interested in playing classic games than I wasn't out on the lookout for anything new quite as much. So, yeah, I think 1996 is where I'm going to call it as far as top tens goes. I mean, I could continue going, but it would be... It just wouldn't be on the same level as the previous years, starting way back in, like, what, 76 to 78 or whatever it was when I started Top Tens. So, yeah, I'm going to call it here. But anyway, once again, these are 10 games in no particular order that I thought were the best ones that came out in that year. So without any further ado, let's go. Street Fighter Zero 2 / Street Fighter Alpha 2. Now, I enjoyed this game a lot. It was fun. I enjoyed its predecessor, Alpha 1. Alpha 2 was just more of the same, but better, at least in my opinion. I had mostly become a Ryu / Ken convert because I despised the changes that Capcom made in the character Sagat in the original Alpha, although I would still play Chun-Li from time to time. Alpha 2 was more challenging and faster, but it wasn't overwhelmingly so. I mean, at least when the game was on, like, regular speed. I was never a big Turbo fan. I just wasn't. Even going all the way back to Street Fighter 2 Turbo, back in, what, 1992? You know, that came out just after Champion Edition. They tweaked the game so it wasn't quite as much of a combo machine as Street Fighter Alpha was. The Sega Saturn version is quite possibly one of the best arcade port of all time, in my opinion, because it had about 99% of the arcade experience, and only hardcore players would be able to detect those changes. Okay, 19XX, The War Against Destiny. This is a game that I would play at Rocky's Replay every time I went there. The difficulty curve was fairly steep in this game, but it was still quite a bit of fun. I got maybe 3/4 of the way through the game before I stopped playing it, and that was when I found it in emulation a few years later. This was a game that, while it was in the spirit of its progenitor, 1942, make no mistake, it was very hard. And just, that's the truth. Japanese shoot 'em ups. I don't need to say much else about that. Let's see, on to the next one. Dungeons & Dragons Shadow Over Mystara. This sequel took almost everything about Tower of Doom and made it better. More special maneuvers, more hidden treasures, a deeper storyline, alternate outfits for each character, and more characters as well. The only place I knew of in Orlando that had this game was at the Church Street Station Arcade, and I would get there as often as I could to play it. Next one. Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo. I didn't really start playing this game until it had come out on the PlayStation, but my roommate absolutely loved this game, and she would play it almost daily at the time. This was before things went to hell between us. It was hilarious. All the characters were in chibi mode, which is like little kid mode. and the things that they would say and do in the game would absolutely leave you in stitches, even if you couldn't understand a word of Japanese. It was basically like a Tetris-style, a competitive Tetris-style game, but it was gems instead of, like, bricks. And the thing was is that you had to build the gems up by putting more and more of the same color into it, and when you shattered that gem, it would, like, you know, go into your character would, like, do super moves and stuff like that, or, you know, it would do just, like, really silly but very effective stuff. It was a lot of fun to play. Let's see, moving on. Macross Plus. I think I played this game maybe once in the arcade, and I cannot remember for the life of me where I played it. I mean, I want to say Rocky's Replay, but I'm pretty sure that's not right. I'm trying to remember where it was, and I just can't. But I became much more familiar with this game once I started getting into emulation. I have the Macross Plus series on VHS, and side note, I had a friend of mine, his name was Kim, who was a really avid anime trader back in the day, and he recorded those for me. I mean, the guy had a setup with, like, top-of-the-line... were they Pioneer or were they Sony? I think they were Pioneer. Pioneer VCRs. You know, stereo hi-fi 4-channel VCRs that he would use to record episodes of anime series and OVAs and that kind and movies and that kind of stuff. You know, it was really cool that my roommate and I knew him because yeah, he had no trouble, you know, trading back in the day. But I digress. I was quite familiar with the story of Macross Plus because it was only a three-episode arc at the time. And it was really interesting. I liked it a lot. It was basically a love triangle between a human pilot, a human female pilot, and a male Zentradi pilot. You know, and the two male pilots were rivals, and their rivalry would just get completely out of hand and things like that. It was a very interesting series, for sure. The game actually followed the storyline a little, but it was a great vertical shoot-em-up, as most of the ones by Banpresto usually turned out to be. And that's Macross Plus. Let's see, next one. Namco Collection Volume 2. I think I saw this game maybe once or twice, but again, I didn't really start playing that until I discovered emulation. The games on it were Pac-Man, Dig Dug, and Rally X, all with the classic arcade games that I knew, and the rearrangement games, which were prettier and tougher to play. It was a rather genius stroke on Namco's part to rekindle interest in their older games by actually taking the concepts and going in different directions with them. Let's see, next one. X-Men vs. Street Fighter. I was down with this game from the first time I saw it, but I just didn't have the time to devote to mastering it. I remember being a fan of Wolverine immediately and trying to figure out the best fighter to pair him with. Playing Rogue was fun because you could steal your opponent's powers for a time. Once you knew what you were doing, it was just a great game. I've seen people who were literally masters of the game, and this is where I think this and basically Marvel vs. Capcom was where I started going away from fighting games because it was getting too crazy for me, and that's just how it was. Let's see, next one, Run and Gun 2. The only place I played this game was at the Church Street Station Arcade, which had the previously mentioned Shadow Over Mystara, and while the game looked and played slightly better than the original, there wasn't much else to differentiate it from its predecessor. I think this is the last dedicated basketball game Konami made, or at least the one that I know of, which actually, now I think about it, there was one after this that had, like, full polygon constructed players. But yeah, that game wasn't a lot of fun, you know, or at least in emulation it wasn't. From 1984 to 1996, Konami was the manufacturer to turn to when it came to legitimate basketball games in the arcade, with the possible exception of Midway. That's not a bad run. That's 12 years. Next one, Neo Turf Masters. This is one of the best and most frustrating golf games of all time, bar none. I've played it several times in the arcade, and a lot more once I found that in emulation. The game is surprisingly deep for its time, as it had features that you would only see on more modern golf games like the Tiger Woods franchise. There are a few streamers that I watch who play this game. You know, shout out to Jalaxian. You know, and, oh goodness, I've forgotten his name. There's another one who plays this a lot, and I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. But yeah, I watch them play this game all the time, and they lose their minds and rail against this game a lot to my amusement. You know, the game can be that frustrating at times. Next one, Raiden Fighters. I like this shoot 'em up well enough, but it was tough to play. No sugarcoating that. I like the fact that you had multiple fighters to choose from, each of them with their own strengths and weaknesses. The action ramped up fast, and you had to be a veteran of the Raiden games in order to make any progress at all, or you would become quite frustrated. Which is true. You know, but Raiden, basically every Raiden game in the franchise is kind of like that. Even the original. That's my top tens. Honorable mentions. Real Bout Fatal Fury Special, Police Trainer, Red Earth, San Francisco Rush, King of Fighters 96, Tekken 3, and NBA Hangtime / Maximum Hangtime. So there you go. My top 10 with honorable mentions. Is there a game that you played that was released in 96 in the arcades that you think should be on this list or at least get a little love? Talk to me about it. ArcadeAddictBrian@gmail.com. Okay, with that done, let's move on to Are You Experienced?
I'm too old for this. Hiding in front seats like a teenager.
Harvey, I think I'm getting too old for this stuff.
I'm getting too old for this.
Listen, you was born too old for this.
I'm getting too old for this.
You're getting too old for this. Lying wet arsed in the heather chasing other men's cattle.
I'm getting too old for this sort of thing.
Maybe you're getting too old for this. What do you think, huh?
I'm not too old for this shit. I'm not too old for this shit. You will not.
We're not too old for this shit.
We're not too old for this shit.
We're not too old for this.
Say it like you believe.
We're not too old for this shit.
We're not too old for this shit.
I'm not going to buy a hemorrhoid cookie.
We're not too old for this shit.
Are You Experienced? Bank Panic. This is a great game and just a hidden classic, in my opinion. You know, because not a lot of people, you know, only the real, like, serious arcade game players and arcade patrons know about this game. But let's get right onto it by reading from Wikipedia. Bank Panic is an arcade shooter game developed by Senritsu Denki and released by Sega in 1984. Bally Midway manufactured the game in the U.S. The player assumes the part of an Old West sheriff who must protect a bank and its customers from masked robbers. Gameplay. Controls consist of a two-position joystick and three buttons to fire at the left, center, and right positions. The layout of the bank is implicitly a circle with 12 numbered doors and the player in the center. The player can rotate to the left or the right using the joystick, viewing three doors at a time, and shoot a door by pressing a button corresponding to its position on the screen. Doors will open to reveal one of the following: a customer who will make a deposit by dropping a bag of money onto the counter, a robber who will attempt to shoot the player, a young boy wearing a stack of hats, which the player can rapidly shoot to gain a deposit or bonus time. The level ends once every door has received at least one deposit. If a customer makes a deposit at a door where a bank teller is sitting, the player earns bonus points. The status of each door is indicated by a row of numbered boxes across the top of the screen, with a red dollar sign representing a door with a completed deposit. A bar gauge above each box shows how close a person is to reaching that door. The disappearance of a dollar sign indicates that a robber has just stolen the deposit, and the player must turn to that door and shoot the robber to recover it. At random intervals, a bomb will be placed on one of the doors, and a rapid timer will count down from 99. The player must move to that door and destroy the bomb with gunfire. Shooting a customer, being shot by a robber, failing to destroy a bomb, or failing to complete the level before the overall timer runs out, shown by a bar at the bottom of the screen, costs the player one life. Some robbers will wear white boots. These robbers need to be shot twice in order to be eliminated. At times, robbers may push a customer aside or duck out of view to avoid the player's gunfire, or a door may open to reveal a customer tied up with rope. In the latter case, the player has a short time to fire one shot to free the customer, who will then make three deposits instead of one. I will stop there because it's a lot more than three. I've seen as few as three and as many as like seven. Yeah, so if the player waits too long, a robber pushes the customer aside. Shortly after a robber appears in the doorway, a timer appears above his head and begins to count quickly up from 30 and back down to zero, leading to a fair kill if he is shot during this period. Higher point values are awarded for shooting when the timer is closer to 0-0, but any shot fired before the timer appears leads to an unfair kill and a minimum value. At the end of a level, the player earns bonus points for all deposits made and any remaining time, and a further bonus is based on the average of time for all fair kills made during the level. Each time the player shoots a red-shirted robber when the timer displays 0-0-0, one letter in the word extra is awarded, shown at the bottom of the screen. Completing the bonus word awards a large bonus and an extra life and immediately advances the player to the next level. Okay, and the reception, really quick. In Japan, Game Machine listed Bank Panic on the November 1st, 1984 issue as being the second most successful table arcade unit of the month. Computer and Video Games magazine gave the game a positive review, calling it a well-designed game. They later noted that the game is similar to Nintendo's Hogan's Alley, which was released in the same year. Computer Gamer magazine wrote that the, quote, colorful and humorous graphics make this an enjoyable, if simple in concept, game, end quote. And finally, the legacy. West Bank is a clone from Dynamic Software for the ZX Spectrum, Commodore 64, MSX, and Amstrad CPC. An Atari 8-bit family clone was released in 1992 as Bang Bank. Interesting. All right. And that's all of the information that I have for this game. We will go right to my experiences with it. The first time I played this game was at the game room in Bolarama, and I would play this a lot. It was very different from most of the games that were around in 1984 or 1985, and that appealed to me. It was easy to learn and understand, but difficult to master. Arnie's place had an original machine, and the Bolarama machine was in a bootleg cabinet. It played great despite that, thankfully. The original machine was very stylish and cool to look at. I forgot how much more fun it is to play this game on a dedicated machine than an emulation until I played on Mark's jamming machine in his garage, then actually playing a Sega machine at Fun Spot the next day. Mark was surprised that I put up a score of nearly 300,000 points on his machine, but as I told him, I haven't forgotten very much about when we used to play doubles at the bowling alley all the time. Apparently he did. And that's Bank Panic. That's our experience for Bank Panic. Let's move on to time for some strategy. Time for some strategy. Okay, Bank Panic is a game that starts off easy enough if you start from level 1 and it progressively gets harder. If you're good at the game, you can start from level 3 or level 6 for extra bonus points upon level completion. There are two ways to play this game. You can play it straight up, like I usually do, or you can point press a little. When you play it straight up, you're trying to get to the doors that either have customers waiting to deposit their money and let them do that before quickly moving on to the next one that's ready. When the level starts, one door will open to reveal the kid holding a stack of hats. Usually it's the leftmost door. You know what to do. Shoot all the hats quickly and earn a deposit, which each progressive level, the stack gets bigger and more difficult to complete. Of course, when you go to a door, you have no idea when you see that red bar at the top of the door number, whether that's a customer or a robber waiting for you. Be ready either way, and make sure to verify that it's a robber before shooting. You will find that as you progress in levels, that the color of the clothing the customers wear is getting closer and closer to the colors the robbers wear, and that's intentional. that's a definite game design thing. Let the customers make their deposits and get off the level quickly. Your bonuses for deposits won't be so great, but you will get decent bonuses for time left if you're quick about it. And if you time the bandits right, you can get a good end-of-level bonus dependent on the average reaction time you had when killing the bandits. Ideally, you want to have a reaction time of 0.00 seconds, which I think gives you a bonus of 10,000 points, which is absolutely huge. You can, of course, shoot them on sight before they have a chance to draw on you, which is actually a good way to end the level quickly, especially if you have a reaction time of 0.05 or lower. If you're point pressing for the first few levels, you're gaining deposits like normal, but once you get 11 of 12 doors deposited, you start going to all the other doors except that last one, looking for additional deposits and more bandits to shoot while keeping an eye on the clock. This method, of course, has more risk, but better reward. You can do this without many problems for the first two or three levels, but starting around level three or four is when the bandits start robbing doors where deposits have been made, and also start shoving customers out of the way to shoot at you. If your timing is really good, you can still point press, but you have to be smart about it. If you get perfect reaction time on the red bandits, of course, each time you do it, you get 5,000 points, but when you spell extra, the level ends immediately, and you receive a whopping 20,000 point bonus and an extra life. I was watching a YouTube video where the poster had a ridiculous score of over 1.4 million points, and I saw that he point pressed to do it. His reaction time to the bandits was incredible. His end of level time was always 0.07 or lower. In closing, Bank Panic is a classic, and not a lot of people seem to know about it. It is a little bit rare, and I don't see it very often, but when I do, I will almost always play it or fire up MAME and play it that way. It's a fun, yet hectic game. And that's Bank Panic. A little information, my experiences with it, and some tips and tricks on how to get good at it yourself if you're so inclined. If you've played this game and, you know, you have your own tips and tricks and, you know, things like that, hey, share them. Get a hold of me, arcadeaddictbrian@gmail.com. And finally, we're going to go on the road. This is a recording from, what was the date? Date is March 18th, 2022. I was thinking about professional game players, or experts, shall we say, and how they, more or less, if a game isn't going right for them from the start, they kind of give it up and they start over. But yeah, that's something that I kind of disagree with, and I think that's what my thoughts were about this. So let's find out. You guys be safe out there, good gaming, have fun, and stay safe always. Au revoir. Hey folks, Brian here, and once again I'm on the road. I'm just starting my job at the hospital, just starting the route. I just left the arcade in Brighton after picking up my pay and playing a quick game of Robotron. Well, that quick game of Robotron turned into 867,000 points. So yeah, I'm starting to get creep ever and ever closer to number one, my all-time high score, which is 907,000. And then, you know, from there, my next goal is to break a million. But one thing that occurred to me while I was playing, so let me break it down for you real quick. So after getting my pay and talking to my manager for a minute, you know, I run in the arcade and, you know, I go straight, well, actually, no, I went to the Xenon machine
and now instead of it having a lean to the right, now it has a lean to the left. I mean, it's just not very even. And the fact that the tech reduced the number of balls to 3 instead of 5, you know, that sort of takes away some of the fun for me. But, so after I played a quick game of Xenon and I didn't get very far, because now the game has changed again and I have to relearn it all over again, I went over to the Robotron machine. And I started the game, and it did not start well. Let me tell you something. Actually, if you give me a moment, I'm going to conduct my business here, and then I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Just as I was going to get my, to do my stop, my dispatcher at the hospital called. So, yeah, I had to deal with that. So, anyway, yeah, the Robotron game that I started off really, really poorly. Like, I was down to my last life at about, what was it? I want to say, I was about 35,000 points in, and I just lost most of my lives due to just not paying attention to what's around me. And, you know, so I'm aggravated, to say the least. But at that point, I had a choice. I could either kill the game off and start over, which is what I see a lot of streamers do who play games like Donkey Kong and things like that, and they're trying to beat their personal best. I mean, I'm not going to mention any names, but they know who they are. I mean, almost all of them end up doing it. They just end up just abandoning the game and starting fresh. So I had that decision, and I had maybe about 5 seconds to make that decision. And hold on, I'm at another stop, so let me take care of this, and I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. This is how it's going to be for this recording, folks. I have a lot of stops to make, and not a lot of driving in between them, so I'm going to try to get my thoughts out as quickly as possible and be able to be understood anyway. Okay, so I had a choice to make. I could abandon the game and start fresh, or I could just play it out. And I decided to play it out. You know, I just said to myself, I could just use this as a warm-up and then start over. That's the wonderful thing about playing in a free-play arcade, and what's even better is when you work at that arcade and you can play the games for free. So that's what I did. I didn't start over, I just played it out, and then 30,000 became 70, became 110, became 150, became 200, became 300, and before I knew it, at one point I had a score of about 350,000 with about 8 lives in reserve, which is actually pretty good for me. You know, it's just one of these things where with Robotron, I have to focus, but I can't focus so much that I don't see what's in front of me. You know, of course I lost my lives to, you know, cheap ways, you know, running into grunts that I thought I had shot, you know, running into electrodes, which is just a brain fart on my part. But yeah, you know, so that's what I did. I mean, I was very happy with that score. You know, it's now top score on the machine, which is cool. Let's see, what else? And so, you know, that was pretty good. And then once I had finished that game, I wanted to break 900, but it's just, I lost too many lives on one particular stage, and then the stage after it, I was on my last life, and, you know, I lose that life like 5 seconds into the level because everything's moving so quickly, you know. But still, you know, I'll take that score. I mean, it's been literally a week since the last time I played Robotron, which was before I started my Saturday shift. I didn't even play it on... Did I play on Saturday? I don't think I did. I didn't play it on Saturday night, and I didn't play it on Sunday. So, you know, the fact that I can still pull that score off, even though I'm not playing it constantly, and when it comes to, I have to buy, like, one of those USB control sticks that are, you know, made like a Robotron control panel, because I'm finding out that the, you know, that the controllers I use when I'm playing in emulation at home, the controllers are just too, shall I say, what's the word I want to use? They're too open in as many directions as you can go. Meaning that, you know, it's like Robotron is a pretty fairly simple game on the surface. You move in eight directions, you shoot in eight directions, and the opponents can move in a multitude of directions. So that's the disadvantage you have to overcome with that game. But, you know, the controllers just don't do that game justice. I mean, the only system that really did it justice was the PlayStation 1, because the control pads were, the sticks on the control pads were not as loose. You know, they were a lot tighter than, you know, the controller I'm using now. So that's just an observation. So yeah. All right. I'm at another stop. So let me pause it. I'll be right back. Okay. I'm back. So yeah, just saying that, you know, the wireless controller that I use is not really conducive to playing a game like Robotron. It just isn't. I mean, could I devote the time to quote-unquote mastering using that controller? Sure, I could. I just don't want to. That's what it comes down to. It's like, nope. I just need just another control panel, and I want one like Robotron so I can play Robotron in emulation and be able to use that and actually do better. But anyway, that was the first part of my thought. You know, just that whole, you know, just that whole, not abandoning the game, even though I'm on my last life and I'm doing very poorly, and, you know, just being, just sticking with it and, you know, having a satisfactory turnout because I stuck with it. The second part of my thought is that, and I touched on it when I was laying out my first thought. One of the things that really annoys me as a person watching people streaming, you know, old school classic video games is when they lose a life when they shouldn't, especially in a game like Donkey Kong that can humble you, you know, even on the first level, you know. And they just, because they lost a life, they'll either abandon the game or reset the machine. And I'm just like, why don't you just play it out? You don't know how far you're going to get, you know, just because you don't have your full complement of lives before you score 100,000 points, which is kind of how it is with a couple of streamers I watch. I don't have to mention any names. Like I said, they know who they are. It's not entertaining to me to sit there and just watch them, just if they don't get the result they want, they just reset the machine or kill the game off. I mean, maybe that's the poor gamer in me talking, but it's like, why waste the energy if all you're going to do is abandon ship because something happened that you didn't want to happen? You know what I mean? I'm not going to say I'm not guilty of it because I've done it, you know, but at the same time, it's like most of the time, you know, with it, if it's, unless I'm doing absolutely horribly, you know, and I will say this game of Robotron I just spoke of was close to that. I'm not going to abandon ship. I'm going to play it out. Now, if I lose that last life and I have an embarrassing low score, like way, 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 way below my average, okay, I'll just take that hit to my pride and then I'll hit the start button and I'll start again and try to refocus. But throwing the game away is just one of those things that just sort of goes against my grain as an old school game player. Now I'm at another stop, so let me stop it there. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. I mean, like I said, I said it in throughout the episodes of this podcast, I grew up poor, so I had to make every life count. You know, if I put my money inside of a video game machine, I had to make it count. That's just the long and the short of it. So yeah, when I see these people who get just so frustrated because, you know, the randomizer on Donkey Kong is kicking their ass, and God only knows that game can humble the world record holders because the randomizer in that game is so nasty and so brutal and so unpredictable that you could be a Donkey Kong expert who can have like an, you know, a personal high score of say like 300,000, 400, 500,000, something like that. And the randomizer can knock you off the game before you even score your first 100,000. It can be that nasty, that brutal. Usually, if I'm playing a game of Donkey Kong and it's being that much of a bitch, I will just walk away from the machine and not play it. You know, because, yeah, there's nothing worse than knowing how good you are at a game, but the game is going to be extremely uncooperative. Oh my goodness, there's nothing more frustrating than that. You know, and, you know, there's no, you know, AI involved or anything like that. It's just how the game is sometimes. Sometimes it'll give you a decent game. Sometimes it'll be a game that's tougher than usual. Sometimes it'll be, you know, it'll be just brutally hard for some reason, but that also can be reflective of your own current state of mind. You know, you could be upset about something that happened at work or at home, you know, something that's in the back of your head that you're not even aware of, but it will screw up your concentration. And, you know, there are a whole bunch of different factors involved to when you walk into an arcade and when you put your money in or you hit start and you start playing a game. Your state of mind is like, you know, almost chief on that list. I mean, it could also be that the proprietors of that game in that arcade have just set the difficulty level to the max. That's entirely possible too. I mean, I told you about the story of when I scored that 100-point game on Double Dribble, which is a hell of an accomplishment, by the way. Let me tell you. You know, I told you, I went in the news corner one day. It was one day after work, and I was coming home, and I felt like playing a game of Defender, and I knew that the difficulty level was maxed out on Defender. It really was. And I only put up a score of like 8,000 points, and I'm usually good for 100. And I was just really pissed. And I could have pretty much ended what I was doing right there, but I decided to play a game of Double Dribble just for the hell of it, and I end up making my all-time high score in front of a bunch of people. Because I just kept scoring and scoring. And, you know, and when I stopped playing, I had 103 points, which is really, really a good accomplishment as far as I'm concerned. Far from the world record, I'm certain, but still an accomplishment. All right, I'm at another stop, so hang on. Okay, I'm back. So, like I said, there are just some times where especially if you're in a free play arcade, you know, where you can play a game as many times as you want. There are just some times where you settle yourself in front of a machine, you hit start, you start playing, and just, you know, the mathematics are against you. The numbers are against you for whatever reason. And my whole thing is like, whether you need, you know, whether it's you're rusty at a game and you're just trying to play it out, or, you know, or just, yeah, you find yourself in a bunch of really screwed up situations in that game, and you're losing lives when you, number one, either you know better, or number two, you just are in those kind of circumstances where, oh, well, I'm dead. You know, anyone who's a video game aficionado from back in the day, they know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, I've seen it at every game. I've seen it, in games like Defender. I've seen it in especially games like Street Fighter, where you beat your first three fights and then all of a sudden the difficulty ramps up on the fourth fight. And if you don't have either your combos or your techniques down, you can get run right off the machine. It's happened to me more times than I care to admit. You know, I'm good enough now where I can avoid it 9 times out of 10. But boy, that 10th time is really, really frustrating, let me tell you. But yeah, any game can be like that, you know? Whether it's just the little $4 game you just bought off Steam that's pissing you off, or, you know, the $60 game that you've made a major investment into and it's not cooperating. I mean, there are a couple of master level Path of Exile players that I watch every so often, and they put up all the fails on YouTube and Twitch, you know, where it's just the numbers are against them. It's the only way you can describe it, you know, where they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and just a situation comes up and they end up getting killed. And more often than not, it's when they're in like a league race or something, you know, and they get knocked out of the race, and, you know, they're frustrated by that. And the earlier it happens, the higher the frustration level, you know, unless they're like really close to the end of the race where, you know, they go to kill like the final boss and, you know, they just get cheesed off their run. That's happened before. I've watched it. But yeah, it's the same thing. Just sometimes the numbers are against you. That's just how it is. Okay, so I think I've gotten most of my thoughts out for recording. So I'm going to call it here. I'm at a stop and I'm trying to get through this evening. Thank God it's not St. Patrick's Day anymore. But still, there are a lot of guys at the bars and whatnot who are watching the NCAA tournament. You know, I don't want to be around the bars when that stuff lets out, because, yeah, there are going to be some really upset people today, I think. So anyway, this is Brian saying have fun out there, stay safe, good gaming, au revoir.
You have been listening to the Confessions of an Arcade Addict podcast. All music has been provided by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his music at incompetech.com. You can contact the show by voicemail at area code 734-623-0832. You can also contact the show through voicemail at arcadeaddictbrian@gmail.com. And all links pertaining to the show can be found at Linktree. That's linktr.ee/arcadeaddictbrian. So until next time, you have been listening to the Confessions of an Arcade Addict podcast. See you then.